Tommy, last night, wasn't, I kind of thought it would be a low event game. And for the first two periods, it was. Oilers were up 2-0 when Nurse scored in the power play. You're thinking, hey, pretty good chance the Oilers could win this game. And then, they give up two goals in the third period. One on a mistake that, Darnell Nurse hasn't made a lot of this year, but that was a pretty obvious one. Giveaway, I should say, on his part. And, Edmonton just, they couldn't get much offense going all game long. And then even in the 3-on-3, where Montreal really struggles, they couldn't beat him there either.
Yeah, it wasn't as entertaining as watching Little Guy and Buzz Beetle by any means, but I'll throw that out there. Shout out to Struds. But, Greg's, it was almost, when they got that two-goal lead, it was almost like, really? Like, wow, they were able, like, I guess good teams find a way. That's kind of how I was looking at it. And I'm like, the record was 16-1-1 when holding a lead after two periods. And I thought to myself, boy, they stole one in Montreal tonight. And then sure enough, it didn't take long. A couple of bang-bang plays, and it's in the back of the Oilers' net, and all of a sudden they're back at square one. I guess frustrating to a certain point, but you can look at it too that maybe they were kind of lucky to even get that point. They put themselves in a position to get that point. Another good effort from Mike Smith. And again, Draisaitl and McDavid don't really seem to wheel and deal like they do against other teams when they play Montreal and Toronto. And we saw another case of that last night. And it almost, started making me think, and I asked Matt Cassian this, if you run into the Canadiens and the Maple Leafs in the postseason, now that we're getting much closer to that, do you think about changing the game plan completely and the style of attack that you have thrown at these teams throughout the regular season? And I think those are conversations and thoughts that are going to start to creep up more and more as we get closer and closer to playoff time, because we're, what, a month, maybe 5 weeks away now, and we're talking about the postseason here.
Well, yeah, the thing is, we talked about it with Strutty earlier, and he actually mentioned he felt that the one big weakness last night for the Edmonton Oilers and their inability to get through the neutral zone on the Oilers, and Strutty admits jokingly, he's an apologist for the defenseman all the time, but he said the Oilers' D-men are way too slow in their regroups. Now, when the regroup is when you have the puck, not behind the net or anything like that, where you're trying to break out, but it's a quick regroup for a transition. You get it maybe 6 feet inside your blue line, between the blue line, the ringette line, and they're not pushing the puck up the ice quick enough. And, they got guys you think you should be able to do that, but they're doing a lot of side to side. So, that'll be something to watch to see if they change. It was an interesting point brought up by Strutty that that's an area that they, because you've got guys that in theory should be able to do that.
And I agree, but this is kind of their thing though, is they, throughout the season, regardless of who they're playing and the opponent, they seem to always try to change the pace or slow it down by doing those D-to-D regroups. And it's not just like one quick pass across up the ice or maybe a bang-bang across the ice and up. It's sometimes you're sitting there watching them hang on to the puck for 10 to 15 seconds before they make a play or make it or wait for a guy to come and circle down low and then build up speed. And it's something that's been a part of their game all season, and I saw Strutty talk about that, and it's a good point. Maybe that's something that they have to change on the fly and look at getting that puck up ice and try to catch teams sleeping, because when you do reset like that and you take your time, you're giving the opposition time to set up their defense against you, and so it's a double-edged sword at times. If you want to go up tempo and speed it up, bang, bang, up ice, you've got some guys who can do that. And, the first thing I thought when Strutty pointed that out was, man, they do take their time regrouping, and they do it all the time. It's part of their strategy.
And it's one that, you look at subtle, like that's a change that, that's something you can change. The Oilers aren't going to be able to change, a lot of the style of players that they have unless they're going to rotate guys in and out. Right. Yeah. And like you look, it's not really a surprise against Montreal's defense that some of their bigger bottom six guys in Kara and Shore are having more success than guys like Cahoon and Nugent Hopkins and other ones 5-on-5. Right. And that's just the playoffs are a different beast. And I still firmly believe, I know he hasn't done much this year. If James Neal can get healthy, I would strongly look at James Neal over Dominic Cahoon.
I'm with you. I've kind of maintained that thought process. It's disappointing the way the season's gone for him, but I think and I'll reiterate and repeat myself again, I still think there's a player there, and I know people will point to his contract and his lack of success this season, but Gregor, I agree with you. I think that there is still an asset in James Neal. No, he doesn't skate particularly well. No, he hasn't handled the puck particularly well either, but there are times where he uses that big frame, and he does have a nose for the net and the ability to score goals and find holes on goalies. So come playoff time, like we saw against Chicago, where he was one of the few effective players, you might need him again, and I'm there with you on that one.
Now they got to Ottawa back-to-back days because of the schedule change, which is even because, keep in mind, Ottawa played last night as well. So both teams are going to play, three games in four nights. They're both going to play back-to-back on Wednesday and Thursday. So there's no disadvantage either way for Ottawa or Edmonton in this regard. So I think it's fine. But I look at how Edmonton's had success against the Senators. Now, the Sens are, they're a confident team, but I do wonder if, the orders get up on the Sens early, if all of a sudden Ottawa's like, oh, man. Because I do think there is the mental aspect of it, and when you've beaten a team, not just beaten them, Tom, but really controlled a lot of those games, that maybe there's some second-guessing if Edmonton can get up early.
I'm getting some flashbacks to the three games the Oilers faced Toronto when you bring that up. And I think of specifically the second and third games where as soon as Toronto got that first goal, even more so in the third game, you could basically tell it was over. So maybe the Ottawa Senators do have a bit of that mental thought process when it comes to playing the Oilers. And I think it does weigh on teams. It's one of those weird things that's a part of the ebb and flow of hockey. So yeah, maybe the strategy is get on them quick, get to their goalies because they certainly have all season long, get them moving side to side, get the screen, score the ugly ones, whatever it takes, establish the pace of play and take it over, dictate it, and break them down early so that you do win and get that mental edge because guess what? You're playing them again the next night, and if you really want to sweep this series, go after them really hard off the get-go. Get in their heads, and then you know what? If you handle things properly, like you have against them in those other seven games this season, heading into Calgary, you're talking about a nine-game sweep of an Ottawa Senators team. Although one that has struggled mightily this season at times, has had good games against every other team in the division.
And here's a pretty cool story, Tommy, for one of the greatest Canadian baseball players of all time, Ferguson Jenkins. Of course, I think probably the greatest Canadian pitcher of all time. There's been some position players. Joey Votto's excellent, Larry Walker, but Ferguson Jenkins still might be the greatest player. He's definitely the greatest pitcher of all time, the Hall of Famer. And he's now going to get a statue outside of Wrigley Field. Like, he's going to become the fifth person honored. Ernie Banks, Ron Santo, Billy Williams, and of course the great Harry Carey is a broadcaster, and Jenkins is going to be getting his own statue. Pretty cool.
This is speaking of pretty cool. I met him. He's a cool guy. Like he's got swagger, Gregs, and I know he's an older gentleman now, but he's almost 80, actually. I met him about 8 or 9 years ago. He was at an Oilers game, and I had the chance to interview him. A good dude, smart guy, obviously a great athlete, and represented Canada really well as one of the few MLB players that were Canadian, 40, 50 years ago in the MLB. And to be enshrined with a statue at a hallowed hall like Wrigley Field is pretty darn cool. And maybe a long time coming, but still, regardless, when you get to those ballparks, I know you've been to a ton of them. Part of the aura and mystique around them is the history, but you do get to see the greats in statue form or the plaques or stuff like that that really make it it elevates the experience, and you get a sense of what the place was like, who these players were. The statues to me are one of the ultimate things you could do and get and receive as an athlete. So Fergie Jenkins from Chatham, Ontario, will be enshrined outside of Wrigley Field. And that's, if you're a young up-and-coming baseball player in Canada, because I know there's a lot of them, and they don't always get a lot of media attention, but it can be done. It's been done for many years, and look no further than Fergie Jenkins and some of the other up-and-comers in the MLB these days.
I just, like, man, that would be a pretty cool to get a statue of yourself. Yeah. And I'll say this, though. Like, I still believe, I don't know, you've been to Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh?
Yes. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, those might be the greatest statues I've seen.
They're huge, too. The Clemente one right outside the bridge, it's like three times the size. And it's imposing. People are taking pictures with it, but it's so well done. The backdrop with the river and the city view across the river, it is so good. St. Louis has a good one, too. Smaller statues, but you're right, Greg. It just adds to that mystique. And I hope, you know, to bring it back home a little bit, I hope we get more statues around the new arena and Commonwealth
Stadium.
But
who,
though?
Who else? Like, because I don't want to just hand out statues for everyone.
No, I know. You got to do it right. Mark Messier is obvious, I think. He's a hometown guy. When it comes to the Double E, you know, you got to think of Gizmo, Jackie Parker, Normie Kwong.
Yeah, they don't do statues, though, for them. I don't think they would, to be honest. Like, they have their.
It would be cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much room around that stadium. But I really like that idea.
No, you're right. It would be, if they did them now, I'd be surprised because they've yet to do one if they suddenly started. But it's definitely a topic of conversation.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be opposed to it for sure. I think you probably have to do like, you know, two at one time or something like that to start.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it would be interesting, like, if you could only pick two Eskimos to get a statue, or sorry, the Edmonton Football Club, who would it be?
Oh, I think you got to go back to the start of it all and honor them first, right? Chronologically, maybe. And
why?
At some point, you get to Hugh Campbell, obviously. Jackie Parker comes to mind immediately. Those guys, for sure. You could do so many. What about busts, too? What about busts, Greggs? You know, you could do a couple statues, and then you could do busts throughout the stadium, just from the kind of chest up.
Yeah.
I like statues, though.
Yeah, you're a big fan of statues. Well, because it's funny, after, like, the Gretzky statue, it's great. But I just, like, after going to Pittsburgh, I was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Like Gretzky got shortchanged here. Like, the Clemente statue might be my favorite one that I've ever seen. Like, the Jordan one outside Chicago is pretty good, too.
Yeah.
But the Clemente one is just, it's another level.
Yeah. They have in Detroit, it used to be on the concourse at Joe Louis Arena, they had Ted Lindsay, Gordie Howe, and was it Red Kelly? And those were great statues, too. I think they're outside Little Caesars Arena now. I'll tell you one guy that got shortchanged, and it's too bad, is Herb Brooks. His statue outside of XL Energy Center is like a mini-me. And for a great, like, legendary American hockey coach, it's too bad. It's a nice statue, but it's you think the Clemente one's huge. You take the Herb Brooks one and put it beside it, and you go, oh, man, poor Herb Brooks.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Tommy, did you watch the final last night after the oil game? I know you're on the post game, but did you catch any of the Baylor-Gonzaga game last night?
I had it on briefly, and I saw Baylor was running Gonzaga's show, and people were up in arms about that, but craziness, man. I know down south, that's a massive thing. I once watched Ohio State on campus play as they were trying to get into the Sweet 16 at Eddie George's with Speck and DVD. And a couple of others, and man, what a night. I'll tell you that much.
Tommy, we will talk to you tomorrow afternoon.
Sounds good, Greg. See you then.